Welcome to Parents' Perspective. What is all this? Dara's mom looked at her daughter's bed piled high with clothing. I'm just trying to see whether I have anything that can make me look good, Dara sighed, running her hands through her hair. What do you mean? Her mom retorted. You look terrific. You look good in everything you own. She cocked her head. Is someone trying to tell you otherwise? Dara began rifling through the debris on the bed. Oh, Matt's been mentioning that I look a bit dumpy these days, you know, not slim and stylish, like he likes, so... Her mother's eyes blazed. And just who does Matt think he is to pass judgment? Dara turned to her mom, her lower lip trembling. Well, maybe you know. He's right, and no one else is telling me. He says he's only saying this for my own good. And we have been dating for more than 3 months now. Dara's mom took a deep breath and sat down at the edge of the bed. You know, honey, she began, ever since you've been dating Matt, you haven't been the same. You've been mopey and sad and hard on yourself. Isn't going with someone supposed to be a happy experience? From a parent's perspective, what should we know about teen dating abuse? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest is Executive Director of the Jewish Coalition Against Domestic Abuse, or JCADA. Alyssa Malter-Schwartz is now in her third year serving JCADA as Executive Director. Alyssa has 15 years of nonprofit and communal experience, including serving as Youth Director, working with staff to oversee programs for children 5 to 18, chair of an Early Childhood Education Committee, where she oversaw the programming for a preschool of 80 children, and director of a National Children's Mental Health Association. Alyssa and her husband have 4 children, ages 4 to 9. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Alyssa.
Thank you for having me.
How prevalent is teen dating abuse in the United States? And maybe you should also describe for us a little bit what abusive behavior is in a dating situation.
Absolutely. The statistics that we have is more than 1 in 10 teenagers experience some physical violence in their dating relationship. But when you talk about any type of abuse, whether it's physical or verbal or emotional, mental or sexual, the number changes to 1 in 4 teenagers who experience abuse.
Are there certain target groups or populations that seem most prone to be the perpetrators? Any people out there that if you were the mother of a dating daughter, you'd say, hey, there's a red flag with this guy?
Those teens who are very controlling, who need to control whatever someone is doing around them. We talk about red flags when we talk with teens because something tangible. We talk about when they're at a restaurant, how this other person behaves towards the waitstaff, the busboy, somebody who's not significant in their life necessarily, but who has a big impact on someone else when you walk into a room and how they treat someone who is not someone who's close to them. Because at some point, they may treat you that way. How they treat animals, which is a big red flag, that people who abuse or in abusive relationships have also done horrific things to animals in their past.
In an abusive dating relationship, do you think a young person can tell early on if her date has abusive tendencies?
Absolutely. And that's something that we try to teach our teens. Let's go back to what abuse is in a relationship. This is the definition that we like to use. Relationship abuse occurs when harmful behaviors are repeated, creating a pattern of violence, power or control over another person. So that's the repeated cycle. It's not if someone has a bad day and gets angry. It's a repeated cycle. Now, that's not to say that if someone hits you, that's ever okay. And if they get angry and take it out on you, that is a red flag, but that is not an abuse. That is a one-time situation. And if that's a pattern that continues, that is abuse. So it may be a red flag the first time that it happens, and it may be something that you need to look out for or watch.
In situations where one person, could be, I guess, the woman or the guy, is putting down the other person. Is that abuse?
Absolutely. It's, again, that power and control. And if we look at the emotional abuse, which we see a lot of with teens, and again, like your story in the beginning, the constant criticisms, making humiliating remarks, name-calling, mocking, yelling, swearing, making the victim think that he or she is crazy, making the victim feel guilty, making impossible rules and punishing them for breaking the rules. We see a lot of that with teens.
Are there certain types of adolescent girls who might be more likely to become victims? And would you describe, is it always the girls who are the victims?
It's not always the girls, but let's talk about the type of child who, or teen, or even adult who may find themselves in these relationships. The most vulnerable are those who are isolated, who don't necessarily have a support group of friends or people around them, low self-esteem. They may have grown up in a home where there's abuse and they may not know what other things to look at and that it is abuse and not appropriate. They have feelings that they're not valued or they're not able to communicate, and a lot of times they're withdrawn. And that is a vulnerable population. That is not our only population. So we do get the people who seem to be the popular teens, the ones who have it all together, the women who are in law school, the women who are doctors. And we find that it doesn't matter in the end what the relationship is or how it started. Anybody can find themselves in one of these situations because the abusers, a lot of the time, are very charismatic on the outside, and they are very willing to put up this show and this performance for the people around, bringing flowers, bringing chocolates, bringing gifts, bringing jewelry, and showing the world what a wonderful, supportive boyfriend, girlfriend they are. And then they come into the relationship, and a lot of the things happen behind the closed doors. When you talk about boys, personally, I see this more and more often. In the technology age now, where sexting and texting and those controlling behaviors have gone from verbal communication to technology communication, I have found that it's really even the playing field, where boys are much more vulnerable because girls can be controlling about where the boys are, who they're with, what's going on. And it's not the constant talking, it's the constant texting, and it's the following up on where they are. And whereas a girl may not do the same thing with phone calls to a home because they may be embarrassed if a parent picks up the phone, when it's to their own cell phone or a text message, they're more likely to pick up on those controlling behaviors and jealousy.
Is teasing that a teenage girl might do, say, with the sexting on a cell phone, is that abuse toward a guy?
It can be. A lot of the times the abuse comes into play where there's an intimate moment that is shared and taken a picture of, and that is disseminated to a large group of people. And so the issue becomes different. You have just put this vulnerable person in an intimate moment and plastered it for everyone to see. And it's like that bell, you can't unring it. You cannot take it back once it's out there. In the technology world, it's out there for anybody to see, which is quite scary.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on teen dating abuse.
Popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Alyssa Schwartz about teen dating abuse. How can an adult tell if a teen is in an abusive relationship?
An adult can tell if their teen or a teen that's close to them is in one of these relationships. And again, these are just red flags or things to sort of look into. That his girlfriend is always checking in on him, calling or paging him, demanding to know who he's with, where he's been, where he's going to be. He acts extremely jealous when she talks to another guy, even if it's just a friendly conversation, if it's a classmate or someone they're working on a project with for school. A teen, you know, seems to be emotionally broken down, sad all the time, constantly bruised, usually quiet or extremely withdrawn, isolated, nervous when talking about the person they're dating, or oddly afraid. A lot of times this isolation is something that we see again and again with teens. So a girl or a boy have a large circle of friends, they start dating, and under the guise of spending more time with this one person, they start to be isolated from their friends, because how long are their friends going to put up with the plans being broken, the plans being changed, not continuing to where they're going to be on a Friday night date or a Saturday date, and they were supposed to go out as friends, but now the boy came into play and you're not going to go out. And so friends don't tend to stick around, because we teach our children if they're worthy, that friend is not worth their time if they're going to keep breaking those dates. And it's a really important line when I go talk with teens about what these red flags are, but always to put in the back of your mind that this friend may need you at some time. And you're really upset and you're really angry that they've broken the past 6 weeks of plans. And you're not going to put yourself in that situation again. But please leave the door open. Leave the door open and say, I'm really angry with you right now. I'd really like to spend time with you. When you're able to spend time with me, or if you need anything, I'm here for you. But it's not fair to me to keep making plans and then for you to break them. So it's really important, especially with someone who's in an abusive relationship, to not close those doors, because the isolation is the biggest weapon sometimes that the abuser has.
Why do victims sometimes defend or lie about, for example, physical injuries that are visible to other people?
Because it couldn't possibly happen to me. I couldn't allow that to happen to me. I'm stronger than that. I'm in law school. I'm valedictorian of my high school. I am on the chess team. I'm too important and powerful and strong for this possibly to happen, because it's a sign that they did something wrong in their own perception. And we know that that's not the case. But how do you move forward and let people know? And if we go back for a second about some of the other signs that parents could see, dramatic change in weight, appearance, grades that have changed. We talk about, you know, studying, and you can't study if you're constantly being followed up on. And if someone wants to know where you are, well, you're just studying. That's not good enough, because he doesn't really know where you are. Again, those injuries that you can't explain, or that is explained away in a different manner. You've watched the other person lose their temper and get angry and then come back sort of in a very loving way after that. And then if a teen is constantly worried that their partner is going to be angry at them for doing something, what they're wearing, if they don't go someplace, if they spend time with their family instead of time with their girlfriend or boyfriend, those are big red flags.
What about emotional door slamming? Somebody who gets angry at the other person and then puts a wall up and doesn't talk to that person, refuses to talk to that person for days on end.
That is absolutely an abuse. We see it over and over again, and it's controlling the behavior. So it's putting the other person on, like they're walking on eggshells. They don't know what the right answer is. Instead of being able to be themselves, they have to be somebody else. And that is always changing. They can't always be the same person, because once they're one person and they think they know the rules, again, it goes back to those rules are changing, and they now have to be something else because they're impossible rules.
What about the situation where the charismatic, wonderful, usually it's a guy, something happens and the person gets infuriated and strikes the other person, and then is remorseful and flowers and jewelry and the I'll never do it again and everything? What do you tell teenagers when it happens once, but mom, it only happened once, and he was really sorry and he cried and he said, please forgive him?
It's never okay. We teach our two-year-olds that it's never okay to hit. It is never okay to hit. I talk personally about my sister, who was in an abusive relationship for 5 years, from the time she was 17 to the time she was 23. And the control that this person had on her life, and we already didn't love him as a person. And so she was afraid to come to us and tell us anything that he was doing, because if she shined a light on him that wasn't glowing, that we would continue not to like him. But she would say to me, but Liz, he never hit me. He never hit me. And the heartstrings just, you just want to melt. But that's not your litmus test. That's not what it's about. The self-esteem of a person who makes the choice to stay, and it is a choice, and it's an unfortunate choice. But what we do is have to, as parents, as friends, as teens, as people in these people's lives, is empower them to make the choice to change and to leave, because it won't change. Once somebody has this pattern of abuse, this is their personality and they will not change. There's actually a book that I find quite brilliant by the man by the name of Patrick Jones. He wrote a book called Things Change, the ironic title. Brilliant, brilliant writer who wrote from the perspective of the abuser and the victim. And each chapter is a different story from one of their perspectives on how this relationship continued. And he just brings into the fold about how this can happen to a girl who's a straight-A student, how her grades can fall, how the boy really doesn't want to hurt her, but he is out of control himself and finds any way to control someone else, and those things don't change.
Alyssa, are there ways we can inoculate young people so they can more easily recognize and resist abusers?
I think the best way is to talk about what abuse is, where the red flags are, like we did about on a date, or about how the person treats other people around them, their teachers, people that are in positions of respect, but also a dating bill of rights, what your rights are as a teen dating. You have the right to be by yourself without changing to suit others. You have the right to refuse a date without feeling guilty. A lot of the times we find that you go on that pity date or that date because you don't want to hurt their feelings. It's okay to say, I don't like you in that way. It's also okay to say, I'm not comfortable going out with you. I don't really want to go out with you. And it's more important that your self-preservation is okay than the feelings of the other person. We as women especially are taught to please the people around us and not want to hurt someone's feelings. But it's okay to say, I don't really want to go out on a date. And it's okay not to be friends with someone. To start a relationship slowly and say, I want to get to know you better before we can become involved. To say no if you don't want physical closeness. That's a really important piece, and it's part that sometimes teens will find themselves sexually farther than they had wanted to go intimately with a partner and not feel that they can come out of it, that they can say no the next time, or that they can change their mind, or that they don't ever have to go on a date with this person again. And those are things that we need to empower them to know.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on teen dating abuse.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Alyssa Malter-Schwartz about teen dating abuse. Two questions. When should parents bring this up with children, not when the girl has already got a crush on somebody they're worried about, I'm assuming. And is this something that's ever talked about in school?
I, as a mom, start talking to my girls at their very young age. I have a 6-year-old and a 7-year-old, and we talk about healthy relationships with friends, what's okay, what's not. Because if you start on a friend level at a young age, when a friend says something to you, if they say, no offense, but you're X, Just because someone starts a sentence by saying no offense doesn't mean that it's not offensive. Just because you have a friend who's telling you something doesn't mean that it's true. And so if we start with our kids at the young age and teaching them what healthy relationships are, regardless of who it is, I don't think you're ever too young. There's no exceptions, and those are rules that we can set as parents about what is respectful. You have to teach that from a very young age, and hopefully by the time they get to make these choices and decisions for themselves as they start dating, they'll be able to see that it's behavior that you've modeled and behavior that you expect of the people who come into contact with them.
And what about in the schools?
Different schools have different programs. We started a program this past year called It's Not Love. And it's a simulation. A teen gets to go through the life of another teen who's in a dating situation. So it takes off the them making the choices. They get a name badge. They get to be someone else. They get a story. And it's a choose your own adventure. Now you get to a decision and you have to choose. Are you going to go do some research on the internet? Are you going to go to a counselor? Are you going to go to a parent? And it may not always be the choice that the teen who's going through the simulation might want. They may have wanted to call a friend. But that's not one of those options. So it's the toolbox that the specific teen has in the scenario that the teen gets to choose. And then we come together and have these great conversations about what they would have done, what could have been a better option, how could they have come out of the situation differently, or what would they have wanted in their toolbox, who could they have turned to. And so we're hoping that through programs like these, education and awareness, and understanding of the technology, which is one of the biggest battles. I think parents are afraid of the technology and don't know what to do next. Making parents aware, and those are part of the steps that I think all of us need to take. Ask your school about bringing a program like ours in. Ask them what the social worker in the school does if a situation comes to light there, if they know who to turn to, because we see that these things are happening younger and younger in these relationships because relationships are getting more and more serious at a younger age.
What is the role of parents and other caring adults if they suspect that a teen is in an abusive relationship?
Well, parents' job is to protect their child, and we have to make the hard decisions sometimes for our children. There's a couple of different approaches to approach them and talk to them with a list of actions and things that you've seen. So these are things that I have seen, which leads me to believe that X is happening, but without emotion. And that is the hardest thing as a parent to do. It's the hardest thing as a youth advisor to do, is to leave the emotion out, the judgment out. They're already so vulnerable. If you're finding that this is what's going on and you really believe that these are the red flags that you've seen. So to have the judgment on, you want to leave that door wide open. Again, you want to be able to say, you know, these are the things that I've seen. This is what leads me to believe these things. What are you feeling? How are you doing? And if they don't agree, if they're going to say no again and again, at least they know the conversation is there. And you just leave the conversation anytime you need to talk to me, I'm here. Or you can talk to your dad, you can talk to your uncle, pick another adult, because it may not be the parent who's starting the conversation. There's also the reality check, and this could backfire in the sense of there's always an answer. But what if you get hurt and nobody's there to help you? Or how can someone say they care about you but still hurt you so badly? What would happen if you spend so much time with him that you lose your friends? If you continue spending all your time with him or her and not doing your schoolwork, what would happen if you don't get to graduate with your class? Now, a lot of these things could be explained away, but I would never let that happen. But there are just scenarios that we owe it to our children to let them know is a possibility. But the one thing that got my sister out of this relationship and what I feel very strongly about is my grandfather, who was in the end stages of Alzheimer's, said to her every day when she left after bringing him lunch, he held her hand and he said, I love you and I don't want to see you get hurt. Repeated over and over again each day. And she is such a great girl. And every time she left, he would take her hand and he would say, I love you and I don't want to see you get hurt. And those are powerful words to say to our children, regardless of the situation, but they know that whatever the situation is, that they can turn to us and say, this is what's happening. I want to talk to you about it.
Alyssa, would you share with us some resources that our listeners can turn to if they want to pursue further some of the issues we've been discussing?
Absolutely. The National Domestic Violence Hotline, specifically for teen dating abuse, is 1-866-331-9474. And that's a 24-hour hotline. Break the Cycle Teen Helpline is 1-888-988-8336. And there are specific hotlines for gay and lesbian teens who need an outlet that will be respectful. You can call 1-888-834-4564. And that is called the Gay and Lesbian National Hotline. Then there's always the Teen Crisis Hotline, which is 917-514-TEEN, which is 8336. You can always call JCATA. Our hotline number is 301-315-8041, or a toll-free number is 1-877-88-JCATA, J-C-A-D-A. You can also go to our website or any of the teen websites. AwareNow.org is our teen prevention website, where you can see some of the red flags that we talked about, that you can print off a dating bill of rights for your child to fill out. Let's go back to the code word. If your child calls you and needs to be picked up because something is happening or a date hasn't gone well, pick a code word. Pick something that you're going to know without any questions being asked that you're going to go and get your child and make sure that they are safe. We know that teens are driving early. When someone gets behind the wheel and they're angry, they're just as likely to get into an accident as if they're drunk. And that's really important that teens know that it's a piece of machinery and what can happen if you're in a car and someone is driving angry or aggressively because they're mad at you.
There's so much more to this, but we are so grateful that you have come and given us very important tools to try to work on this very significant problem for teens. So, Alyssa Schwartz, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me and letting your listeners know what an important issue this is.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 429 and tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the SF Foundation. Our sound engineer is Elizabeth Buckle. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.